Watching the Oreo. Watching the Oreo. Watching the Oreo. Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. As we like to say, this is your official source when it comes to the Orioles for a baseless opinion and for a lack of insight. Today is April 10th, 2013, and hey, Scott, this is episode 30, so we've hit a milestone. I am Jake English, this is Scott Magnus, and we're here to break down a little Orioles baseball. Before we jump into things, we're excited about baseball.
Yeah, it's back in Baltimore.
Well, Baltimore, Tampa, wherever.
Yeah, go Devil Rays.
I knew you'd be excited to start there.
Yeah.
All right, before we dive into things, why don't we just start with the normal. What's the drink of the week?
My drink of the week is National Premium, which I think it was last week as well.
I'm having a flashback here. I'll have you know that I switched it up just so that I didn't do that. This week I am drinking very poor quality margaritas.
Drink all your margaritas poor quality?
Yeah, I don't even have salt.
You could just put Old Bay on it.
I could. All right, that's the drink of the week. Now, next, I want to go to my favorite segment of the podcast.
Which one's that?
That's the Brian Roberts watch.
Oh, that ended quickly.
What are you talking about? Brian Roberts is doing great.
In what alternate reality is that the case?
Brian Roberts' statistics for the 2013 season are amazing.
You're absolutely right. And Nolan Reimold's statistics for the 2012 season were absolutely amazing.
What are you insinuating?
Let's just say your prediction that he was going to play 100 games looks like it might have been a little off.
All right, a little optimistic.
A little? A little?
We don't know.
You're right, we don't know.
All right, so Brian...
We don't know if he's ever going to come back and play again.
So Brian Roberts got hurt in what, the fourth game of the season?
Third game, actually.
Oh, so he... Yeah, right, because he got hurt in the ninth inning.
Yep. Third game. So it's like 2 8/9, really.
We're not even going to give him credit for that third game?
No, not really. I just remember Gary Thorne saying, when he was being carted off the field, the third game of the season.
Oof. That's brutal. It's a shame, too, because he had really been doing well. I mean, you know, his play in the field was okay, and he was contributing at the bottom of the lineup.
He was turning over the lineup very well at the ninth hole. He was mediocre at defense, but he was doing an A-OK job. Still comes back to the aspect of you had to expect that he wasn't going to make it through this entire season.
I think if we're going to try, and I don't know why we would, but I think we're going to try to find a silver lining. It's the fact that he's only going to be out 3 or 4 weeks with this injury, this time. So he'll be back at some point during the season, and who knows what will happen.
You say 3 to 4 weeks, I say June 1st.
Okay. The initial estimate was 3 to 4 weeks. I don't really know
to begin baseball activity again.
All right. We shall see. All I'm saying is that he won't be lost for the entire season for this injury.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm also glad that it wasn't his head.
Okay. We'll see what happens, people. So Brian Roberts is on the DL now, 15-day DL. And like you said, he probably won't be back for at least 4 weeks. And more likely, it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks.
All right, I'll buy that.
Woohoo.
Do you want to look at the rest of the DL at this point?
Sure, we can talk about the rest of the DL.
As you know, we still have Wilson Betemeade on the DL. We narrowly escaped having to send Nolan Reimold to the DL. Chris Tillman came back to make his first start on his regular appearance. We still got Steve Johnson on the DL.
Yep.
Am I missing anyone?
Dylan Bundy was on the minor league DL, which is something of note. Now he has come off of that at this point. And
it's all that long toss.
Yeah. Wada is still on the 60-day DL, but he also is going to be pitching a 3-inning game coming up soon.
Yeah, I think that 60-day DL is really kind of bogus for Wada at this point.
I think he'll be back by midseason. I think
he'll
be back.
Oh, I agree. No, I think he'll be ready before that point.
Oh,
the fact that he's on the 60-day is kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But that's pretty much all I can think of in terms of medical injuries. The only other thing that I would be watching is Markakis's throws from the outfield have really caught my eye, so I'm really wondering if he's having issues with that bulging disc again.
It's possible. The other thing to keep in mind is that apparently the team has a case of the flu running through it, so you never know on any given day who's not at 100%, and they just don't want to cop to it.
Yeah, I mean, it was so bad that they had to get rid of Ayala that, you know, they basically said, we don't want you spreading this plague anymore.
I think that Ayala was hitting on all the women near the bullpen, and they wanted to put a stop to it.
My wife is going to be very disappointed.
I know. So if any of you didn't hear, why are you not following our Twitter account? Why are you not checking our Facebook page? But for all of you who didn't hear, Louis Ayala was traded to the Braves today for some minor league arm in a massive salary dump slash making of the way for TJ McFarland.
26-year-old double-A pitcher that's a reliever. Probably is not going to ever make it to the major leagues. It's just filler for minor leagues. But, hell, you do get rid of his salary, so if you're saying we want to get rid of a mid-30-year-old reliever with salary and keep a Rule 5 draft pick, okay.
But well, I really think that this trade happened for a couple of reasons. First, I'm shocked that it wasn't a player to be named later, because that's the most popular guy in the league,
yeah, right?
But, A, you wanted to make room for TJ McFarland. The club really feels strongly about keeping him. And, B, you were using a short bench because you were trying to keep McFarland on the club, and injury was starting to become a factor with that short bench. So somebody had to go in the pen. You had a number of people who were out of options. But the real killer for Ayala, I think, was the fact that his role in the bullpen had diminished because others had really come to fill that role. You know, he wasn't the primary setup guy. That's become Strope.
Yep.
He was not your primary, oh my God, put a fire out guy. That's become O'Day. So
yep.
he can't go a ton of innings back there in the bullpen. So what role does he have there? I like Louis Ayala. I think he's a dependable arm back there. He's a leader. He keeps the bullpen, if not the clubhouse, loose. But he was expendable.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see him is he's almost like a long man in a certain regard. He's just not as dependable as a long man.
Well, and plus he couldn't be long.
Yeah.
If you lost your starter in the fourth inning, Ayala was only going to get you to the sixth, tops.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. You're right.
So, I mean, he was really just a victim of the way the roster was constructed. And, you know, you're in good shape when you can get rid of a reliever like Ayala and not feel like it's going to hurt you.
Well, the team's not really set up for him anyway. I mean, the point of the matter is we're bringing in the bullpen when there's runners on base, and Ayala had a terrible history of letting inherited runners score. He led over 40% of runners score that were on base last year, and considering how good the bullpen was, that just seems like a major blemish on his record that he was that poor in those situations last year. He also had an equally troubling occurrence this year already with letting runners come in as well.
Sure, I mean, small sample size.
Very small sample size, but considering you also had last year as well,
Look, it's easy to beat up a guy who's gone, and I don't want to pile on. I will say he's a good veteran reliever who we simply didn't need anymore, and my God, isn't that a good thing?
I agree with you. You know, maybe in the future, a few years down the line, hopefully the Orioles said, here's my number, so call me maybe.
A few years down the line, he'll be in an old folks' home. What is he? He's 35,
Thanks
right?
for not coming with me on that one. I really appreciate it.
No, I'm not touching that one.
Okay.
Even a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
Carly Rae Jepsen was pretty impressive, though.
Really? Throwing the first pitch, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so she threw out the first pitch on Sunday. I missed the first pitch. I came in a little late. And it was funny because everybody made a really big deal out of it. I think it was the off day on Monday because, like, the team's Twitter page was all about, hey, look at this picture from the other day of Carly Rae Jepsen throwing out the first pitch. Who cares? First of all, she's a singer, and she didn't even come in and do the Star Spangled Banner. I know she's Canadian, but it's a pretty popular song. You'd think they could have taught her the words.
You can't lip-sync the Star Spangled Banner very well.
Ah, I see. Apparently, if Ryan Seacrest isn't there to tell you to do it, it's more difficult.
Seacrest, out!
All right, what were we doing? We're talking about the trade. We're talking about the roster. Ayala out. What's his face in the AA? Jones. Chris Jones.
Yeah.
And the real winner here is TJ McFarland, and hopefully the real winner is the Orioles.
Yeah, I'm thinking take Chris Jones. It's some kind of combination between Chris Davis and Adam Jones. We'll be in business.
All right. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. We'll see how it works.
Yeah. But let's back up a little bit. Opening day.
Opening day. My favorite day of the year.
Yeah. Go ahead. You start. This is your favorite day. This is your Christmas.
This is my Christmas. I love opening day. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. I love opening day because of the enthusiasm. It's the only time of the year in the past where you've had, you know, a stadium full of orange-clad yahoos who are actually excited to be there. I got to be honest. After having gone to so many games last year and having gone to playoff games, and even that, like, September 6th Cal Ripken game, opening day was just another big game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I really was, previous years it was, it's the only time this whole year that I'm going to see a full stadium of Orioles fans cheering on their team. And after last year, I kind of expect more.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The people that were there were excited to be there. There was a lot of enthusiasm for the team, but it didn't match.
You had to sit next to your dad.
I got to sit next to my dad.
There's you were drunk as all hell.
That was also true. Yeah. But
you had a triple-decker sandwich.
It didn't match the...
Man, you just shoved that meat into your mouth.
I'm good at that.
Yeah.
I'm good at that.
There you are.
The triple-decker sandwich, by the way, comes highly recommended. It's a hot dog with pulled pork on top with bacon, which was previously on a stick, on top of that. It is...
Maple glazed bacon.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The construction that you get in the ballpark doesn't look anything like the pictures that they put online, but if you eat it fast enough,
you're not expecting delicious. Like Leroy to be putting together a masterpiece behind the counter.
No, there was nobody in a chef's hat. But opening day, it was great. Look, you know, we won in dramatic fashion, and Chris Davis hitting that home run was a whole lot of fun. But I was surprised that it wasn't more of like a thing. You know,
I don't think it's as big of a deal. I think, like I wrote him in the post this week, it was opening day, but I feel like we should be getting more, and it's not something that we have to be looking forward to. We should be looking to meaningful games in September and October.
Sure.
It shouldn't just be it's the only game of the year that we should be focusing on.
Instead of the peak right there, it was the gear up.
Yes, this is the impetus.
All right. So you agreed that the vibe was a little less than I think we've experienced in the past.
At least for us.
Sure.
At least for us, but I think for other people, it probably had a great vibe to it. I mean, driving home that day and listening to the radio, there were a lot of positive people coming on the radio and being like, this is the greatest opening day I've ever seen. So I think continuing that trend of magical baseball, and especially having an opening day like moment like that, I think it made a big impact for the community. I know when I came back on Monday, everyone at work basically said, you saw a hell of a game. And I said, yeah, I did. And there really was no talk about the rest of the weekend, which was good, but they said, I saw a hell of a game on Friday. So people are interested. People are talking. It's just a question of what do the Orioles do for the rest of the season?
Well, before we dive into the rest of the season, I want to speak very briefly about the pregame festivities. You know, I love seeing the Orioles come down the orange carpet and all that other nonsense. It was a real bummer to me that Brian Roberts got hurt right before the home opener, because it would have been nice to see him introduced to the home crowd and have the fans have that opportunity to connect with him. I think there's a lot of people that have really forgotten what a good Oriole he's been. The fact that he's given a lot of great years to a terrible franchise, and the fact that in a lot of years he's been the only highlight of a dreadful season.
You're absolutely right. And you also have to remember how hot his wife is.
I have not forgotten.
Okay, I just wanted to remind you about that.
But, you know, he had the opportunity to go elsewhere for more money.
Of course he did.
He re-signed with the Orioles. He's a good guy. He's a good Oriole. I wish that he would have been able to take more of a part of the celebration.
Well, he meandered out there.
Yeah, he hobbled out there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same as watching him run down the orange carpet. The other thing about the pregame festivities I wanted to get your take on was the first pitch.
I thought it was crap, to be honest.
I agree with you.
I think it was crap. I think it was absolute crap. I think it was the aspect of, well, we really can't think of anything good, or the Ravens players bailed on us and we really can't think of anything else to do, so we're just going to say it's a tribute to Earl. And I don't really understand that tribute to Earl aspect.
Yeah, so basically, if you didn't hear, they put a ball on the mound and left it there and said, in lieu of a ceremonial first pitch, we're going to leave this ball here and there will be no pitch as a tribute to Earl Weaver. What that has to do with Earl Weaver, I have no idea. What I can tell you, and I almost put this on the blog, and I'm actually really glad that I wrote it up and saved it as a draft and left it there and looked at it the next morning, because I was kind of hot about this. The Orioles reached out to members of the Ravens organization to take part in opening day festivities so they could celebrate the Ravens Super Bowl championship, and everyone in the organization that the Orioles reached out to couldn't make it because of
prior commitments.
Because of scheduling difficulties.
Yeah.
Someone from the Ravens spokesman actually used the word scheduling conflicts.
Yeah.
And that just smacks to me of Bush League.
Yeah.
Seriously, nobody in the Ravens organization could make themselves available for 20 minutes to walk into Camden Yards, wave, maybe hoist the Lombardi, take on all that adulation, throw out a ball, and book it out of the stadium. Nobody had time for that?
Evidently not.
Okay. I think that came from the top, and I think that's crap.
I can't argue with you. It's very disappointing not to see a member of the Ravens there. But that's the internal decision. Still, going back to the Orioles and things that the Orioles could have done, I don't quite understand why the Orioles couldn't have, like, Earl's wife out there and having her throw out the first pitch. I kind of thought, you know, a really good thing for them to do was, if they wanted to do an Earl Weaver tribute, bring Earl's wife out there, have her throw the first pitch, the umpire stand behind whoever's taking the first pitch, make a ball call, and then have Buck come out, turn his cap, and kick dirt on home plate.
All right. Now,
that'd be pretty cool.
I agree with you. That'd be cool. I'm not sure that Buck would have gone for the theatrics of it.
Do I need to pull up the Darren O'Day video again?
Okay. Perhaps you win. Perhaps you win.
Yeah.
All right. So
you heard what Buck said about the number four. He's like, I will make sure I will never walk across that number four.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he said he was there during all spring training, of course, as well. And he said, I made sure very carefully never to walk on that because there's a certain amount of respect that I have for that man, and I'm not going to besmudge that respect for I have for him. Bye.
Well, I got to tell you, I didn't notice that when I was down in spring training, but I'll review my tape and I'll get back.
Okay, to it. Maybe you could post your pictures eventually.
I did promise pictures, and I have yet to come through on that.
Yeah.
It's interesting with Buck because he is, you know, he has such a high regard for Johnny Oates, and now he has this connection with Oral Weaver after having, you know, spent some time with him last season. So I find that interesting. All right, why don't we go ahead and take a break? I'm going to freshen up my terrible margarita. When we come back, I want to start talking about the actual business of baseball in the 2013 season. You can put the past away. I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You could cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand. I would understand. I would understand.
All right, and welcome back. All right, we're going to delve now into the 2013 season. What started off really great in Tampa kind of tailed off when baseball came back to Baltimore. He had a really up period for four games, and that was really peaking with the Chris Davis timeline. And then it kind of all fell apart. Well, it actually all kind of fell apart with Chris Davis as well.
It's true. My question is really, good, bad, indifferent, what kind of assessments can we really make after seven games?
Nothing, really.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad, but it's a small sample size. People can't get too excited, and people can't get too down. In fact, I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend.
Yeah, we just played that, so thanks.
Oh.
Really do appreciate it.
Did we do that?
Yeah, we already did that.
Okay. All right.
We queued up the mid-90s music, so everyone is jammed along or said, oh my god, these guys are so cheesy and cornballish, which we are.
But I want people to think of 96, 97, 2012. You know.
That was a reach.
Everything's a reach when it's Orioles baseball in 1996 and 1997. If it weren't for last season, it would be a real reach.
Okay. But yeah, I really don't think you can get a really good accurate prediction of the season after the first seven games. I mean, you think back to 2011. The Orioles in 2011 started 5-1 for their first six games. And that season turned out magical. And by magical, I mean there was nothing magic about it except for the last series against the Red Sox.
Right, right. If you were willing to wait for the last game, it was great.
Yeah. But the rest of the season, kind of was terrible.
Yeah.
Kind of was terrible. So it's 7 games, Baltimore. It's not a big deal.
I think people really need to walk that thin line between the Orioles apologists and the I told you so Orioles fans, right?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think it's the aspect of those first 4 games, everyone was calling up on sports radio and basically saying, we've got the best lineup in baseball and we've got quality pitching here. There's no one that can stop us. I don't know why people were expecting us to fail. And then the Orioles lost to the Twins and people were calling up and saying, God, this team sucks. They're not any good. We should have gone out and bought bats and we should have gone and got, you know, a high-priced player. But no recommendation of who we should have got or anything like that.
Well, of course not. Or how we would have gone about getting them.
Right. So it's a lot of overreaction, but that's Baltimore. Baltimore overreacts.
And I'll tell you, the same people that are calling in and saying that Ryan Flaherty is an absolute bum and he's a quadruple-A player at best are going to seem are going to seem just as foolish by the end of the season as the people who are calling in saying, Chris Davis is an MVP candidate, he's going to be great. Look, both of those things may be true. One of the other may be true.
Right.
But 7 games is too fast to get credit for having said that.
No, you're right. But Ryan Flaherty is a quadruple A player.
And Chris Davis is an MVP candidate?
Top 10.
Okay.
Not top 5 like Matt Wieters.
You're going to stick to that prediction as long as you can.
Yeah, you've already lost the 100 games to Brian Roberts.
I have not. He has not yet missed 63 games.
Yet.
All right.
Yet.
All right. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we fit into those standard roles, the Orioles, we'll call it pessimistic fan.
That'd be me.
And the Orioles apologist.
Oh, that's you.
Yeah, that's kind of how that works out.
Yeah.
All right, what do you got, Mr. Pessimist?
My pessimist attitude is, you know, you look at pitching so far this season, and it's been absolutely abysmal. The starting pitching has some of the highest ERA in all the American League. The bullpen has not been the consistent bullpen that it has been in previous years. It just doesn't strike you as the same pitching staff, and it's not just Hamill, and it's not just Chen, it's not just Arrieta and Tillman. It's everybody's just not quite the same as they were last year. A part of me looks at that pitching rotation and questions the aspect with Buck holding out some of our starting pitchers from spring training this year and saying, oh, we don't want to show them to our competition. There's plenty of video already out there. If people want to do scouting, they're going to do scouting. It's not like spring training is going to do it. Instead, we had our starting pitchers basically going against AA talent, and those guys swing at anything, so they really couldn't fine-tune pitch location.
You mean the Houston Astros?
Hardy har 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 har. No, I actually mean minor league teams. Even though they're a quadruple A team, okay? Just like Ryan Flaherty.
I'll take that.
But that's the rotation's a mess. What do you think so far about the pitching?
As the Orioles apologist, I can't argue with that. We're not getting enough innings from the starters, and the bullpen has been spotty. Some of the bullpen's been great. Darren O'Day. I think Brian Mattis has done a bang-up job. Even the Rule 5 kid has done great. But Tommy Hunter, you know, Louis Ayala was rough in his start. It's not the bang-up 2012 bullpen, and we're not going to get that.
Yeah, let me go through some of the inning breakdown. So Hamill has pitched a 6-inning game and a 6.2 inning game. Chen pitched a 5.2 and a 6.1 inning game. Gonzalez pitched a 6.1 game but was skipped his start. Arrieta had a 5-inning game, and Tillman had a 3 2/3 game.
I agree. I think we've really only gotten 3 quality starts out of our starters thus far. One of Hamill's games wasn't his fault on Sunday.
Yeah.
But aside from that, yeah, we're not getting enough. And the guys that we were hoping were going to bounce back, Tillman and Arrieta, so far it's not there.
And here's the thing, too. It comes down to, if the starting pitchers are not getting deep into the games, you're just going to tax that bullpen, just like we saw at the end of last year. And that bullpen isn't even close to being as good as it was last year. It's going to be disastrous by the time you hit August and September.
From the apologist, what I will say is, one time through the rotation, you can't make sweeping generalizations on how guys are gonna produce. Okay, Tillman got roughed up. Look, everybody has a 3.2 inning performance at some point in the season. Yeah, you don't want to see it the first time out of the gate. And if he backs up this particular outing with another crappy outing, okay, maybe you start to panic. But one time through, let's hold off on saying that he's a total failure for the 2013 season.
And I'll take that into fact, because you had people like Strasburg, Price get rocked up this past Sunday, and basically you had a bunch of quality Cy Young winners and everything get absolutely railed. And it's part of the aspect of it's early in the season. People are still working on their pitch location and their command. So, yes, I will buy that aspect of it is possible that it could have been one bad game.
And again, I'm not saying that they're going to be great. What I'm saying is it's too early to bury them.
Okay. I will cede that argument to you. Now, the one argument I won't cede to you, and it's the one I've been hassling you for, is the fact that Brian Roberts, once again, is hurt. And this whole aspect of the club coming in this season thinking that Brian Roberts was going to be the starting second baseman and not having another option besides Ryan Flaherty and Alex Casilla, it's kind of a joke.
Well, my apologist defense in the offseason was, okay, Brian Roberts has every indication of being healthy, so he's doing well, and the club has a whole bunch of options behind him, which are okay, pretty decent, which looks pretty crappy when you've got guys like Flaherty, who's 0 for April, and Casilla, who's 1 for April. The guys behind him just not getting it done. Roberts, you know, unfortunately with that injury, I hate to admit it, but you're right.
I mean, my question would be, why didn't you go out in... I know there really wasn't any great second baseman on the free agent market that you could get. Why don't you go out with some of your cavalry and trade them and get a decent second baseman?
Well, I mean, in the winter meetings when we talked about this, the Orioles found that nobody else valued their pitching, possibly because their pitching hasn't shown that they're valuable yet.
But yeah, but they were looking at high-quality players. They weren't just looking at mediocre second basemen.
I don't think there were a whole
lot... I'm not talking like David Wright's here. I'm talking...
I don't think there were a whole lot of second basemen available, and I don't think we had a whole lot of bullets in the gun as far as a trade was concerned.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
But I will totally concede we should have had a better plan coming into second base.
Okay. All right. I want to go to DH next.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do.
Ugh.
Wilson Benamede is out probably for the half of the season at least. So your DH has been a combination of Nolan Reimold, Ryan Flaherty, and Steve Pearce. Flaherty and Steve Pearce have been 0 for everything so far this season. And Nolan Reimold was the only one going into tonight's game with even one hit at the DH position.
I think we were 1 for 23 from the DH position going in for those first 7 games.
Yes, for the first 7 games, we were 1 for 23. But that being said, there's got to be some better production. They have to call up somebody basically to take this spot if Reimold is not going to be available. If Reimold's available, that's fine, but you're going to need to have someone back him up, because it's not like he's going to be able to play every single day. He's going to get hurt eventually.
Look, and this sounds tired and it sounds lame, but you got to give him some time to work out of this. I mean, I know that Flaherty is 0 for April, but at this point we're talking about a 0 for 14 slump. If it was an 0 for 14 slump in July, you wouldn't think anything of it. Yeah, he sucked for the past couple of games, but what are you going to do? That happens. It happens. Unfortunately, it's being magnified by the fact that it's all we have to talk about in April.
I'm going to come back to the aspect of last year when you were being the apologist after the second series and saying, you know what? It's the Yankees. So what? We got swept against the Yankees. At least we went to extra innings. I said, so we went to extra innings for 2 games. And you said, yeah, that's pretty good. And I said, I'm sorry, that's bullshit. I want to win now. I remember that specifically in my head. And you know what? If we would have won those 2 extra inning games, guess what? We would have won the AL East.
But the point I was trying to make there in that series was the Orioles of 2011 would have rolled, and those games would have been won by the Yankees in regulation. Instead, we took them toe-to-toe, we took them the extra innings, we came up short, but we showed fight. And that fight manifested itself through the remainder of the 2012 season and the remainder of the 2012 extra innings games, in which, how did they do?
They did pretty well.
Okay, so trial by fire against the Yankees in the first series ended up giving them experience that they used moving forward. We don't want to fight this same fight. Look, it's okay to say I'm right.
I don't know if it was so much trial by fire. I'm more expecting it to be something like magic or something.
All right, that I'll take.
Yeah.
Look, as far as the second base, as far as the DH position is concerned, we just need to give these guys more time. Unfortunately, the losses are racking up while these guys struggle. But again, we're only talking about 10, 15 at-bats here. If it stretches on longer, okay, sure, you've got a case. But in seven games, eh.
Just be careful not to fall into that Jake Fox hole. Jake Fox came out of spring training on fire. Everyone said, oh, what are you doing with Jake Fox? What are you doing with Jake Fox? He didn't contribute, and he was sent down.
I wish I could argue with you. As you know, Ryan Flaherty won the Jake Fox Award, hit a bunch of home runs in spring training. He really impressed in spring training, forced his way into the club, and, you know, Benamete's injury basically sealed his roster spot. But Flaherty and Steve Pierce, guys who won spots in the spring, have got to, at some point, start hitting.
You've got to think something in the notes here, and I'm not sure if I totally agree with you about this, but you have this thing in here, and we're going to switch roles here. So I'm going to become the apologist, and you're going to become the cynic. You want to take the cynic route on this one?
Yeah. Manny Machado looks lost in the two-hole.
Okay. Let's come back for a second. Let's look at the lineup.
Okay.
Who's going to be your number two-hole hitter?
Anybody else.
J.J. Hardy?
Yes.
J.J. Hardy was absolutely abysmal last year in the two-hole.
He was abysmal. He was absolutely wretched. Here's why he's better than Manny Machado. Manny Machado is becoming familiar with the major league hitting. He needs to grow. I'm okay with Manny Machado growing and learning on the job in the major league level because he brings not adequate, great defense to third base, which we were sorely lacking last year. And I'm okay with a 20-year-old kid taking his lumps at the plate if he's in the 7-hole or the 8-hole or the 9-hole. But as your number two hitter, you need more than that. And he has
been
over...
What's he supposed to do?
He's supposed to get on base.
Okay.
He's been overmatched thus far.
So far. But it's only been 7 games.
It has only been 7
It's only been 7 games. So you need to show patience with these players. How does that sound to you? Isn't that just like a big old kick in the nuts?
I feel like you can be patient with Manny Machado, and I have no problem waiting for him. I just have no idea why we're waiting for him in the two-hole. Put him down lower in the lineup. Now that Roberts is out of the 9-hole, there's not a whole lot of competition out there for quality guys. Why bother putting pressure on him in the top of the lineup when you could allow him to grow at the bottom?
Because you're letting him see good pitches because he's protected in front and behind.
But he's not taking advantage of those good pitches.
Yet. But he's learning.
I will give you yet, but learning on the job in the two-hole...
Not to mention what happened tonight, I'm just saying. But,
All right, we're recording here at about 11 o'clock. The Orioles have already won on a Manny Machado huge home run in the bottom of the...
Out of the two-hole!
Out of the two-hole. So Scott has a point. But screw you, I'm still right. Ish.
Yeah, it's like he got the bases loaded, and then it wasn't the bases loaded anymore because it was a wild pitch. And then he got a good pitch to swing at because they were like, well, we can't walk him because then we're going to come up to Merkakis next. So we'll have to throw you a good pitch to try to get this out. And bam, 3-run homer right over the Green Monster.
All right, so we're both arguing with small sample sizes. Unfortunately, in 7 games, that's all we've got to work with.
Yeah, fuck you, statistics. Give us a bigger population set.
Seriously. All right, so we will agree to disagree about Manny Machado. Hopefully he makes this a moot argument later. I want to move on to the 8-man bullpen, which has since been resolved. But until today, we were dealing with a bench that was way too thin because we were keeping that extra reliever. And my argument at the time was, we're dealing with this thin bench. A lot of the lineup isn't really being effective, but the guys in the minors are no better. I mean, Norfolk just lost the game 21-4, in which Jason Prydy had to come in and pitch in the bottom of the ninth, in the ninth inning, because we were out of terrible relievers.
That's pretty bad.
Connor Jackson, who was the last major league cut, is struggling. Zach Britton is not mowing down guys in the International League. You know, these guys who are struggling at the major league level.
Does this mean I need to take off my Zach Britton shirt that I'm wearing right now?
Maybe it's your fault.
Or maybe because I wore it tonight, the Orioles won.
I'm hoping. I'm just saying these guys who are struggling right now need to get it together because in spring training we thought, oh, we have a plethora of talent that's good enough to make the club. Those guys are struggling in AAA. we're stuck with what we've got. We've got to make it work.
Yeah, but it's only the first 7 games, so it's probably even less than that for the minor league. So here's the thing. I'm going to put in perspective for the Norfolk aspect. At least it wasn't 30-3.
That's true. That's
at least it wasn't 30-3. 21-4, okay. 30-3, awful.
They didn't allow it to get to 30-3, though, because they didn't have Fat Albers.
Gotcha.
That is the entire reason it did not get that bad.
See, I think they were looking around, they're like, shit, we don't have the number 30. We can't make this happen.
All right, so basically the lesson here is get a grip on reality. It's 7 games. Don't beat your chest over the wins. Don't tear your clothes over the losses. It's not that bad. It's not that great. Let's give it, what, 40 games to the quarter pole before we can say this is what the team is or what isn't?
I'd say give it to the end of April. By the end of April, we can start to have a serious conversation about where this team's at. I guarantee you this team is going to be right around the 500 mark, right around at the end of April. So we'll be 1 or 2 games above or below 500. And we're not going to know a ton. I don't think this team is going to go out of the gate and burst out like wildfire. I think this team is going to slowly dawdle along near or at 500. And then I think Gausman is going to come up sometime in July and August, and this team is going to be absolutely on fire for the rest of the season.
Well, remember during 2012, the magical season that it was. If you go back and look at our podcast, because I know that our listeners go back and listen to old, stale content. But if you go back and
listen... It's pretty funny, though.
We were saying, like, every week, okay, is this when the other foot is going to fall? Okay, is this the other foot going to fall? Okay, I guess this is going to be the start of the losing streak. We were ready to write them off at every part of the season.
Well, you remember the end of July when they had the 6-game losing streak. We basically said it's over.
Right. We were never happy until September.
August. Mid-August, we said, we've got a shot here.
So basically, if we can keep it close until August, we'll be happy?
Yeah, I think so.
So, Oriole fans, keep some perspective. Try not to live and die by every game. It's the same advice that I tried to live by at the end of last season that I failed at. Try to keep perspective through the early part of the season.
I mean, the way I consider it is, we were looking at it last year, and we were saying, in order to get a wild card number 2 spot, on average, it was 88 games. On average. Now, last year, that wasn't the case. You had to have 93 games to actually win the second wild card. But on average, for most seasons, it was you needed 88 games. So my perspective is, if you get 88 games, that's not that much above 500.
Stay in the conversation.
Stay in the conversation. So if you're right around that 500 mark, you're in the conversation to get that second wild card spot.
I think the only thing that is negative to take out of this start is that, you know, championships can't be lost in April. Or, I'm sorry, they can't be won in April, but they can certainly be lost. And when we lose winnable games in April, that kind of thing just adds up at the end. You know, if we come up a few games short, we're going to look back at series like the Twins and say, ugh, we could have made it.
I'd agree. All right, let's go back to a segment that we did last year. And
wait, you mean we did something right last year?
Yeah, it actually worked out pretty well. But it was the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, I'm going to start this year because the person that has impressed me the most so far this season has been Chris Crush Davis, or Chris the Credible Hulk Davis, or whatever you want to call him, Thor, or whatever you want to call him. I mean, he's just been absolutely on fire for the first 4 games. He literally played the best offensive games I've ever seen any player ever play.
He was impressive.
I mean, there literally was... Joel Maddon came out at basically the end of the Tampa Bay series and said, if it wasn't for Chris Davis, we were taking all those games.
Yeah, he was insane.
And Buck basically came out and said, this is the most impressive stretch of a player that I've ever managed before.
It's got to be nice for Buck to see that one of the guys he handpicked to bring into the organization is doing something like this.
Yeah, I mean, he's been absolutely raking the ball. And I still come back to the aspect of, we were there for opening day. And that grand slam, the whole stadium knew what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. He came up and you said, Of course he's going to hit a home run.
Well, actually,
why wouldn't he hit a home run?
We all stood up cheering, and you turned to me and said, it'd be great if he hit a home run. And sure enough, as soon as you said that, as soon as the final word left your lip, ball out of the park.
The funny thing about that is that if you watch the replay of him hit the grand slam, the crowd was cheering before it was clear that A, he had hit the ball, and B, that it was going to go out. Like, Chris Davis swung, and the crowd went wild.
Yeah.
Because everybody knew, this is the way it has to end. He is that on.
Yeah, it was literally on. It was the aspect that he was grounding out through that whole game. We were like, what the hell?
He's due.
Yeah,
he's
what the due. Hell?
You know, he cooled a little bit afterward, but you're right. He started on fire. It didn't matter, lefties, righties, what the game situation was. If it was a ball in the air, Chris Davis was going to make it hurt.
Yeah, and I still have to come back to the aspect of we still have seen great offensive performances throughout the rest of the lineup, too, for certain players. Adam Jones has had a great offensive performance. He has had a 7-game hitting streak going into this game, and he actually extended it for an 8-game hitting streak into tonight's game. That's pretty darn impressive to start the season. I mean, I know it's a small sample size and everything, but that's still pretty impressive.
Look, if it weren't for Chris Davis, we would be talking about Adam Jones batting 500 or whatever he's batting. That would be a big deal.
But even Markakis and Wieters are doing very well right now in the lineup in the 3-hole and the 5 or 6-hole as well. So tip the cap to that middle of the lineup. They're doing a great job. They're raking the ball. It's just a matter of where the rest of the lineup is doing from the starting portion to the bottom of the order.
That's right. Chris Davis is not only hitting home runs, he's hitting home runs with men on base because guys like Markakis and Adam Jones are hitting in front of him, and a guy like Wieters is commanding enough respect behind him that Chris Davis is getting pitches to hit.
Correct. All right, let's go to your good.
My good? I'm going to go with TJ McFarland.
Okay.
This is a guy that...
He's only pitched once, though.
This is a guy that I saw pitch live in spring training, and I was like, what's the big deal? He's a tall, lanky kid. He throws with his left arm.
I'm a tall, lanky kid, okay?
And I'm a lefty. I'm just saying, I saw nothing
so
special.
So if we had a child, he would be TJ McFarland?
Yeah. I'm going to say... There's no evidence to say that he's not our child.
Yeah, stranger things have been known to happen.
Have they?
Not really.
All right, moving along.
Yeah.
Look, TJ McFarland, I was not convinced that there was anything special about this guy, and they were fighting to keep him in the organization, and then they finally brought him in. And he was really impressive.
He was very impressive that game.
Here's the thing about him. He does not have velocity. What he does, he's one of those prototypical...
Neither does Miguel Gonzalez.
Lefties.
And neither does Miguel Gonzalez. Miguel Gonzalez does not have speed, but he knows how to pitch.
Right. In 3 1/3 innings, I think he had 5 strikeouts.
Yeah.
He has the type of stuff where he can hit you with multiple arm angles. He can hit you with not great speed, but a good change in velocity.
Kind of like Steve Johnson.
Yes. Yes, he is the left-handed Steve Johnson with a little more height. But I think he's got a chance to be a really effective pitcher out of the pen. And he's been a starter his entire minor league career, so he's the kind of guy to keep on your radar for, you know, maybe he's part of the actual cavalry.
Okay. I'm going to let you go right into your bad next.
All right, my bad was on the other side of the mound, and that was Jake Arrieta.
Okay.
Jake Arrieta, look, we talked all about it last year. What's his big bugaboo? The big inning. He's cruising along. He's got all the tools. He makes pitching coaches crazy because he's supposed to be great. He's got great tools. He's got great pitches. He pitches great until that one inning happens. And that's exactly what happened on opening day. And I can tell you that I left to go get that triple-decker hot dog. And when I did that, we were suddenly down by 4 runs.
Yeah.
Jake Arrieta gets bit by the big inning. He's got a 1.80 whip in 5 innings pitched in his first game.
A 1.80 whip?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't make that kind of... Look, I looked the stat up. First of all, I should get credit for having looked at numbers before we started talking.
That's like Kevin Gregish.
It is Kevin Gregish. Second of all, it's terrible.
And I know, it's Kevin Gregish.
In 5 innings pitched, he's allowed 7 hits and 2 walks. The thing is that, you know, I know he pitched tonight, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of a rain delay and a lot of kind of other stuff, but he wasn't impressive in this start either. I don't know how long the leash is for Jake Arrieta, but I know that my patience for Jake Arrieta is going to be very thin. This is the year that's going to decide, is he a major league pitcher? Is he a pitcher for the Orioles? Or do we move on? And so far, he's been bad.
Okay. I can't argue with you about that. It's pretty evident. So, yeah, let's just keep moving on.
All right, what's your bad?
My bad has to be... I'm going to go with Chris Tillman. And I understand what you said. He did have a poor performance, but just didn't seem like he had a really good location of his pitches. His also delivery was all over the place with his pitch angle and stuff like that. And Palmer was looking at it on the broadcast and just saying he looked off. I think back to that July 4th game last year when he first came up, and I was watching that game, and I said, holy cow, who the hell is this? And what the hell do they do to Chris Tillman? And this Chris Tillman almost looked like the Chris Tillman of old and not the Chris Tillman that I saw for the half of the season last year. I'm hoping you're right that it is the aspect of he's just getting into the feel, and especially since he didn't pitch any games since the beginning of March, he could just be getting into a feel of how am I supposed to pitch again. But it's a little concerning that he's going to have to learn how to pitch again against the AL East.
Yeah. God, I hope he's okay, but you're right, he did not look good. It's not just how it ended. He didn't look good. I mean, right. It's as if he forgot everything he learned when he was down there dealing with Rick Peterson. He looks different in his delivery and his demeanor and everything that he is on the mound. Forget the statistics at the end. He's just not the 9-win Chris Tillman we saw from 2012.
Right. All right, I'm going to go right into my ugly. My ugly is who the hell is Steve Pearce?
It hurts me.
It hurts me, but he is absolutely atrocious. He doesn't know what he's swinging at or hitting at. It's absolutely a train wreck, and I don't know how the Orioles can let it go for much longer. The whole reason he made this team is because he came out of spring training hot. There are plenty of other players that can do exactly what he is doing. Connor Jackson is one of them. Connor Jackson's not very hot, though, and the minor leagues right now.
Okay, but Russ Kanzler, I mean, that kind of guy.
Correct. Russ Kanzler could come up and do it. You've got Ishikawa as well that you could bring up if he got hot all of a sudden. There are plenty of guys that could fill Steve Pierce's role. And if you're even looking for a DH, you could bring up like Danny Valencia if you really want to.
Sure. But if you want a guy that can do what Steve Pierce is doing right now in the majors, my dead grandma could hit the same way.
Right, exactly. I mean, we could just put Luis Sala out there and have him bat. Oh, wait, we can't do that anymore because he's gone. But Steve Pearce gets my truly ugly award. He's on notice, so just watch. He's going to break out this next week, but he's on notice.
I hope so.
Yeah. Who's your ugly?
All right, this hurts me. This is no good.
Okay.
My ugly for this week is Adam Jones and that thing he did on Sunday.
What?
Oh, yeah. It's not actually that thing he did on Sunday. It's those things he did on Sunday.
He had two things that he did that were pretty poor. Look, I'm assuming you're talking about the fielding, and I'm assuming you're talking about not running out of the...
Yeah, the fielding I'm less worried about. He lost the ball in the sun, and it dropped between...
Do you really think it was sun, or do you think it was communication? Rymel got pretty close there.
Whatever happened, the ball dropped between Jones and Reimold. It's Jones's ball.
It is Jones's ball.
And instead, it happened to be the event that chased Jason Hamill out of the game.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is additional runners, additional pitches. It was just the nail in the coffin for Jason Hamill. It cost the Orioles the game. Period.
Can't argue with this.
Okay. I'm less upset over that because those things happen. Okay.
Not the Gold Glovers, but...
What am I upset over? I'm upset over the lack of hustle. Adam Jones hit a ground ball back to the pitcher and jogged his way up first base.
Yeah.
The pitcher ended up bobbling that ball and just barely throwing out a jogging Adam Jones. If Adam Jones had put his head down and run to first like you're supposed to do, he would have been safe, and who knows what happens at that point. The Orioles needed base runners. The Orioles needed runs. This is not what you can expect from your team leader. This is not what you can accept from your team leader. And Adam Jones let the Orioles down in a big way. You know, I feel like this is the type of thing that a 2010, a 2011 Adam Jones would have done, and maybe that would have been okay. But the difference between those two clubs and the 2012 club is that a guy like Adam Jones ran out every ball, and that he encouraged the rest of his teammates to run out every ball, to give their all every play of the game. And it's disappointing that he didn't do it on Sunday. And I absolutely feel like we should beat him up over it.
Okay, but it was one game.
It's one game, but he's the team leader.
Yeah, but it's one
game. Not only was it Adam Jones, it was Casilla on the last out of the game.
Yeah.
He mailed in running to first base, and again, he probably could have beat it if he was actually trying, but he didn't. And he didn't because he wasn't held accountable, because if Adam Jones isn't going to do it, why should I?
Well, no, he was held accountable after the game with Buck.
I'm saying that effort that we got from Adam Jones, our $86 million man, was ugly. And for the week that was, the opening week for 2013, that, my friends, is the definition of ugly.
Not to mention you were in attendance, so it pissed you off.
I was not happy to see it.
Yeah.
All right, so...
You were a little bitter. And you weren't drunk at the time either.
Was a little bitter? I'm still a little bitter.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell.
All right.
I'm supposed to be the bitter one. You're supposed to be the orange Kool-Aid.
If the apologist is angry, something is wrong. All right, so we've reached the good, the bad, the ugly. We reviewed the first week. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up over the next week. We've already run through a little bit the first game, in the fact that we're now on Wednesday. Boston took the first game of that series, and the Orioles took the second game.
In a magical fashion, and we'll have a recap of that on the website. Thursday, tomorrow, Chris Tillman is pitching, so we'll see if it was just a one-game fluke. Boston did say that they're going to actually pitch Alfredo Aceves out of the bullpen tomorrow.
Ooh.
Because they wanted a left-handed option to basically come out of there. And then in New York, it's going to be Miguel Gonzalez, Hamill, and Chen pitching.
I love seeing Miguel Gonzalez pitch in the Bronx. It will be it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, and for the Yankees, they're throwing out Cece, Kuroda, and Pettit.
Oh, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. No big deal.
I hope that Nick Markakis is wearing the heavy pads in his gloves.
Yeah, I'm hoping he charges the mound with a baseball bat.
All right. Well, the other thing to look forward to is that there are a couple of off days. We already endured one on Tuesday. There's an upcoming off day on Monday. And I got to tell you, there's nothing worse in a baseball season than the off day. You know, you lose a football game, you have to stew in it the whole week. You lose a baseball game, you get to go back and get them the next day. But when those off days happen, it's rough.
Right. Well, yeah, it's been an interesting up and down period for this first week. And like we were talking about, it's a long season, Baltimore. Stay confident. This team is going to bounce back. This team has shown resiliency in the past. It's not like this team is going to go away.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'll say, you know, keep checking the website for our Around the Diamond game updates. We do a little recap. We go around the diamond, first, second, third base. Basically, your four key takeaway moments or themes from the game.
And if you fell asleep in front of the TV and you're drinking, it's a good chance for you just to get caught up with what you missed, as opposed to having to listen to Gary Thorne's ramblings or Rick Dempsey's whatever he tries to say.
It's water cooler ammunition. We try to make sure that when you go into work the next day, you're prepared to talk with your colleagues.
Correct.
The other thing I will mention as far as the website is concerned is please feel free to send us feedback, either that be a comment on the show notes, whether it be an email to contact@birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. The other thing...
Or naked pictures of Brian Roberts' wife.
Scott will take that, and I will chide him fervorously for that. The other thing I'll tell you is that we are on...
I didn't realize that chide meant masturbate, but...
No, it's slightly different.
Oh, okay.
We can also...
I was going to have a talk with my wife, but...
Oh, my. Are you done? Anything else you want to get... You want to bring up Kevin Gregg again?
I'm done now. I just got it all out.
Okay. We'll clean up later.
Yeah.
The other thing to mention is that we are on iTunes. You can find us on at www.birdseyeviewbaltimore.com/iTunes, which will take you directly to the iTunes feed. Feel free to rate the show... to leave a review. We'd love to hear from you and let us know exactly how you're feeling about it. You can find us on Miro and Zune and all those other places.
Facebook.
Just Google.
Yeah, just
that's all.
Look for Bird's Eye View Baltimore on everything. BEV is another one for us. So just look for it. Tell your friends. And, you know, if you mention it to your friends, just let us know. Like I said, get in contact with us. We'd love to talk to our community.
That's right. All right, and I think that'll just about do it.
That's going to be it. Like I said, we'll stop back next week after probably the Orioles play the Yankees. We'll get back in early next week, and we can finish up this Boston series, and we can talk about the Yankees series. I think that'll give us a really good perspective of now playing three teams in the American League East, and we can get a good perspective of how this team is doing. Hopefully there will not be as many bitter grapes as there was tonight.
That's right. What can I tell you? Too small a sample size this week. Next week, we'll have another small sample size to review.
All right. Let's make inaccurate predictions and go crazy and blow things out of proportion.
That's what I like to hear. And with that, Baltimore and beyond, we bid you adieu, adieu.
What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Does it mean masturbate?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.